All right, so next we have Patrick Hayden, who will tell us about black hole microstates versus the additivity conjecture.
All right, so this is joint work with Jeff Pennington. And first, I'd like to say thank you to the organizers for inviting me to speak here. And after that, immediately, I want to apologize because I am going to be publicly picking a scab, and no one likes to see that. So this is an intellectual scab, which was formed a bit over 10 years ago in quantum information. Our greatest hopes and dreams proved out to be wrong, but they weren't shattered, they were kind of corrupted. And so it's not the kind of thing that you could just forget about forever. It just kind of it lurks in the back of your mind and continues to be annoying and creeps up from time to time. And that's this business of additivity. I'll tell you what it is. But it turns out that there's a connection between this old problem in information theory and the structure of the space of black hole microstates. Now, we have to talk about exactly what that might mean. But the statement is going to be that given some states that look like black holes, if you have enough of them, if you take superpositions of them, you'll be able to make things that don't look like black holes. That's not in itself surprising, but there are going to be, but there are going to be many ways to do this. Although I can't guarantee that. Actually, we're going to be working in the context of ADS-CFT. So we're going to have an ADS short-shelled geometry, maybe CFT2, ADS-3. And while we're here, I'll cut the boundary with a piece I'll call A on the left, and then A's complement on the right. And the size of A is less than the size of A complement, a bit less than half, say. Okay. And what we're going to find is that one of two things is true. Actually, it could be two of two things. So this is an exclusive, non-exclusive either. I don't know. Yeah. So either there is a huge number of, let's call them black hole microstates, that don't look like the original black hole, okay? So either, So there exists huge set of black hole microstates. I'll call them, say, psi j. And when I say huge, I mean that the log of the number is the black hole entropy. So the black hole entropy may be minus some order one amount. Yeah, it doesn't scale with G Newton. So there's a large number of these states such that if we calculate in the field theory the entropy of A for that quantum state that I'm calling the microstate, it is very different than the entropy for the black hole. At leading order, it differs. Okay?
So that, imagine if these states are superpositions of things which are black holes?
Yeah, that's, well, I'll say this more precisely later, but that's what it's going to boil down to pretty much. So there are lots of different ways to take superpositions of black holes and make things that look very different than what you started with. So that's the first possibility. The other possibility is something that we were calling the additivity conjecture, which is not true, turns out. But this additivity conjecture has, I'll just call it extensive violations. So I've written two possibilities on the board. One is clearly the more interesting option. It just, which one you think is the more interesting option depends on what kind of an audience you are. So if you're a quantum information theorist, you might think this is the more interesting option. I'll tell you what it means. If you're interested in quantum gravity, you probably think this is the more interesting option, although it's the kind of statement I don't think people normally think about this too much. You wonder, there's a discussion, what happens if I take superpositions of geometries? This is now a kind of more precise counting question. So one of these things has to be true. I don't know which one. Let's just say like the angular size of A is some constant less, right? So this one is pi so minus epsilon,
like
the other is pi plus epsilon.
Oh, okay.
Right. Yeah.
Then that's not surprising to me.
That's not.
Yeah, aren't all the microstates such that?
The entropies of A in a microstate looks nothing like the entropy of A in the.
A is the small piece.
Yeah.
It's so that if you use Ryu Takayanagi, the surface does something like this, and it doesn't see the black hole. And so for generic microstates, these are going to be very, very close to each other. Yeah. Perhaps. Right. Yeah. No. So we've canvassed people to see whether they find this surprising or not, and they're different. Yeah. They're differing opinions. I'm going to stand back and say, I'm just asserting that it's something that could be true, and it's one of two possibilities. So let's say that makes it more interesting. Huge set of orthogonal black hole microstates.
But it's a set, it's not the dimension of a linear space.
It's a set. Yeah. Okay. So what is this additivity conjecture? So I'm going to spend a few minutes just telling you what it is so that you can actually feel somewhat invested in this dichotomy. And the story is just, it's actually one of the oldest stories in information or quantum information. So if you have a quantum channel, N, right, something that takes density operators to density operators, you could ask, how good is it for sending information? So if you want to send information through it, you'll have some message M coming in, classical message. You run it through the channel. Or I should say M prepares a density operator, or prepares a quantum state, runs it through the quantum channel, a quantum state comes out, and you measure the output, and then you get some estimate of the message. And this is a communications procedure. To make it more interesting, and to start to use some structure, people often think about many uses of the channel. So you could say you allow yourself K uses, and then you try to figure out what is the optimal rate at which you can send bits through the channel, and you impose a condition that the probability you make a mistake goes to zero as k goes to infinity, and the capacity is just going to be the optimal rate. So the capacity is going to be the limit as you take many uses of the channel of the supremum over all the ways that you could encode and decode, subject to this constraint that you have to get the answer right, of the total number of messages, or the log of the total number of messages that you're able to transmit this way, divided by the number of channel uses, so that it becomes a rate. And that's the definition of the capacity. So this, this problem has been around forever. Shannon thought about this problem in the early days of information theory, and one of my favorite quotes at the 25th anniversary of the invention of Shannon's publication of his famous 1948 paper, there was a conference celebrating that great achievement, and a well-known information theorist, John Pierce, spoke up at that meeting and says, I think that I've never met a physicist who understood information theory. I wish that physicists would stop trying to reformulate information theory and instead give us a general expression for the capacity of a channel with quantum effects taken into account. That was 1973. He would be rolling over in his grave if he realized how much physicists have tried to reformulate information theory since. He seemed to think it was an easy problem, right? It's just the physicists were distracted asking the wrong questions. Ironically, 1973 is also the year in which the first interesting progress on this problem was made. But it took another 24 years to really make more serious progress. To figure out what C is. So, yeah, it's an optimization question, right? It's a number, given n. But the optimization problem's not easy because you have this hard constraint. You have to be able to decode with vanishing probability of error. And you're allowed arbitrary encodings and decodings, anything that's consistent with quantum mechanics. So it's a non-trivial problem.
And in classical information, there's just some mutual information.
Maximize mutual information, yeah. And that was, sorry, I should also say, you know, the thing Shannon is most famous for is solving this problem where n is a classical channel. It takes bits in and it gives bits out with a stochastic map relating them. So fast forward, not 25 years this time, 24 years, you know, to 1997. Halevo, Schumacher, and Westmoreland, they give a formula for this capacity. And so what you have to do is you have to introduce I'll call it chi of the channel, Halevo chi. And this is going to be the maximum. So you allow yourself to prepare states for the channel. Those are my rows, density operators, rho sub x, with probabilities p sub x. And you calculate the mutual information between x and the output. And this is sort of, so the state has a name, a label, which we call x. The actual state that's put into the channel is rho sub x. The state that comes out is n of rho of x. I'm just calling that the state on b. So there's a mutual information, and you maximize it over all the things you can throw through the channel, and you get this quantity chi. And what they showed was that the capacity is, well, what you'd like to be true would be to say that it's chi, right? Because then you've just reduced, you know, you've solved this problem. You just say, okay, all I have to do is maximize over some input ensembles, evaluate a mutual information. But in fact, it was the limit k goes to infinity of chi evaluated on chi, on many copies divided by k. So they showed that, you know, they showed this. This is a significant achievement. That first progress on the problem in 1973, Halevo showed this was an upper bound. And in 97, you know, these three people, they showed that it was achievable. There is a way to construct encodings and decodings such that you'll get this limit. Now, in this room, people are used to dealing with mathematically hairy objects. A limit k goes to infinity does not look so bad, you know, like, okay, good, you know, you looks like the problem's pretty well solved. But it's not as good as it looks. And the reason it's not as good as it looks is that, you know, what is mutual information? It's the entropy of one thing plus the entropy of the other, minus the joint entropy, like so, right? And I could put a little lambda here, a little lambda here, put a little lambda here, just throw in some lambdas, right? And it turns out that this formula is true for any lambda. So if I put lambda between 0 and 1, not equal to 0, any one of those will actually give me the right answer. And so this is kind of a hint that, well, we don't really know what the answer is. You know, there's a lot being hidden in the limit. And another way of phrasing it is that there was a qualitative open question that wasn't resolved. And the open question was, does it pay for this encoding to entangle states across the different uses of n? Right? That's the question. So I'll say, actually I have to put down my conjecture one is just that the capacity is equal to chi. And that would be true if, to get the optimal rate of communication, you never have to use entangled states, right? But if you do have to use entangled states, there's something qualitatively new happening, and that's what corresponds to a violation of what we call additivity. There's a simpler way to formulate the problem, and this is the one that will be related to, that we'll be able to relate to our dichotomy up top. So now we can just, I'll define, what do we have to do? So given a channel, I'm going to define the minimum output entropy of the channel, S min, and it's exactly what it sounds like. I minimize over all input states the entropy of the output state. Okay? And conjecture two is just that this quantity is additive. If I have two channels and I look at their tensor product, then the minimum output entropy is just the sum of what you would get from the individual channels. So the minimum output entropy is always of the tensor product channels always less than or equal to the sum, because you just take the minimizer for the first one, the minimizer for the second one, you plug it in here, and you get equality. But you could use some entangled state to get a smaller minimum output entropy. And so this is the additivity conjecture, and yeah, Peter Shor showed that these two things were equivalent. And so this is the easier one to think about. In order to get the lowest entropy state out of a pair of channels, do you need entanglement or do you not? That's the question. Okay. Okay. So that was a big conjecture in quantum information theory. People worked on it because if they had solved it, they would have actually finally solved the quantum version of Shannon's problem, which was the foundation of information theory. It's a good thing to do. So as it turned out, though, a bit more than 10 years ago, I was thinking about the Renyi version of this problem. Right? So you replace the von Neumann entropy here by the Renyi version. And you find, for Renyi parameters alpha, for all parameters larger than 1, this conjecture is not true. And not only is it not true, it's badly not true. So there exist channels that have two channels, N1 and N2, that have, I'll just say, big, huge, whatever. They have a lot of output entropy. Their S min is big. But when you look at the pair, this is with an alpha, when you look at the pair, the minimum output entropy of the pair is barely larger than the minimum output entropy of one of the channels on its own. Right? So this is the largest, most gruesome kind of violation of additivity that you could hope for, right? That by using an entangled state, you find that there's actually no penalty to having a second channel. And when you translate that back into the language of capacities, if this was not Renyi entropy but von Neumann entropy, you would learn that entanglement really helped for communication. Right? This would be a nice thing to discover as a quantum information theorist. So later that same year, Matt Hastings showed that C2 was wrong. And that would be the end of the story. But the violations he found were small. He constructed probabilistically counterexamples. But the gap, between the right-hand side and the left-hand side here was less than a bit. And in the intervening decade, people have looked, and the largest, worst counterexample that has been found is in a channel with input dimension 183, one bit of violation. And then, it's a family, so then as you go for dimensions larger than 183, it just monotonically decreases. And that's the worst, right? And so this is the scab. Because, if the conjecture were false, you would like it to be false in a way that would actually, be useful in some interesting way. We could actually use entanglement for communication. But it's false in a way that is just totally unsatisfying. It means that you can't calculate this capacity. But entanglement, if it helps, it doesn't help a whole lot. And we can't, it just sort of leaves things unresolved. And so the question is going to be, that's my, option two, they're actually very large violations of additivity. Not just a bit, but an amount that scales proportional to the black hole entropy in the problem. And so if somebody wanted to communicate using black hole microstates and the receiver, for some reason, received half of the boundary of the CFT, then for such a channel, if this thing were true, entanglement would really help to maximize your communication rate. Yeah?
Why isn't the limit as alpha goes to 1 if huge also huge?
Oh, good question. So the reason is that the channels you use for different, you use a channel here that depends on alpha. So this was a kind of obvious proof strategy. Prove this for the alphas, then take the alpha, go to 1. That's why he cared. But it doesn't work that way. Yeah. Okay. So that is the story of 2. So now the story of 1. So now we're talking about black hole microstates. So first, let's think about the thermofield double. It's a sum over energy eigenstates, e to the minus beta, energy, energy eigenstate j, and then the CPT conjugate. And so here we have this this particular state, and it's going to play an important role here. I'm going to want to construct a channel, and the channel that I'm going to use, the input is going to be a space of black hole microstates. And so how do I choose my space of black hole microstates? Well, provisionally, I'm just going to take a window around the mean energy for this thermal ensemble of size e to the black hole entropy, such that I can approximate the thermofield double state. Okay, so I'll call it my H code is a window. I'll just call it around the expected energy and the log of the dimension of H code is sort of approximately the black hole entropy. So this is provisionally my space of black hole microstates. And now this is not a set. This is actually a vector space, right? I did that slightly incorrectly. I have one more board here, right? Oh, no. OK. So I can then define my cutoff. I can restrict the thermofield double state to the cutoff subspace, H code, and I'll get some approximate thermofield double state, which is in H code tensor, H code maybe conjugate. And these things approximate each other nicely. Okay. So now, let's think about a typical state.
There's a tilde on one of those?
Oh, yeah, thanks. Yeah. So if I just randomly choose a state in H code now, unitarily invariant measure, whatever you want, then for questions, if I evaluate the entropy on this region capital A here, yeah.
Plus?
What should be?
H code cross H code bar, did you mean plus? And then is H code a subspace of the flow focus space, or is that a subfactor?
So the thermal field double is in two copies. Oh, sorry. So I should say H code, right? H code is a subspace of a single copy of the CFT, and then the thermal field double is in two copies of it. Yeah. So the typical state, if you're only looking at less than half of the boundary, looks like the black hole, right? And so for this state, we have that its entropy is approximately the same as the entropy that we would have for the black hole, right? If we took the thermal state, right? That there could be some fluctuations, but they'll be the same at leading order in G Newton. And now I'm going to make an assumption, or I'm going to imagine something which is not true. So this is, for the purposes of illustration. So now let's imagine that this statement is true, I'll call it my statement star, not just for typical states in H code, but for all states in H code. Okay? So imagine that star is true for all phi in H code. Well, what does that mean? Well, I can define a channel which goes from the density operators on H code, right? This is now one copy. This is really one copy. So now I introduced the thermal field double state. Maybe I shouldn't have at this point. I'm going to use it later, but I'm just working in one copy. So I'm going to define a channel N, which is the channel that takes me from the black hole microstate to the state on the boundary, right? So density operators here to density operators there, right? So it's really just the partial trace, right? Restricted to this subspace. And that's a channel, okay? And that's going to be my provisional channel in this additivity question. And what do we learn? Well, S min of n by star is approximately the black hole entropy, or not the black hole entropy, the entropy for the black hole thermal state evaluated on A, right? Now, now let's think about the thermal field double. So, or rather, let's think about so S min of n tensor n bar, and forget about the bars, right? So what is this? I allow myself all possible entangled states between two copies of H code, and I ask, what is the smallest entropy I can produce this way? It's certainly larger than what I get with the thermal field double, or at least as big. The other way around. At least as small. But calculations going all the way back to Hartmann and Maldacena and Schenker and Stanford, they've looked at this kind of question. This is just, we take the geometry of the thermal field double state, which is some kind of wormhole. We have an A1, we have an A2, and we ask, what is the entropy of A1, A2? And the correct surface goes through the wormhole and is strictly gives us an entropy which is strictly less than the sums of the entropies for the two pieces, right? And it's strictly, the gap between them is order 1 over G Newton, right? Another way of saying this is that the mutual information between A1 and A2 in the thermal field double state is equal to order 1 over G Newton. Right? It's a big number. And that tells us that this thing here is strictly less than the entropy of A1 plus the entropy of A2. And by our assumption, that's just the same as the black hole entropy for A1 and A2. So we get a gap. So the point is that when you run the thermal field double state through the channel you construct this way, when you look at these relatively small pieces of the boundary, or less than half, you can learn that this is not two copies of the thermal state, right? It gives you a qualitatively different entropy. It gives you different surfaces in Ryu Takinagi. And the translation of that is just that the minimum output entropy of the product is significantly smaller than the sums of the minimum output entropies of the individual factors. Okay. That's how you get the connection between the possibility. Well, that's how possibility two, the additivity conjecture gets related to the black holes. How do we relate it to, to this this statement right here, a little bit more precisely? Sorry?
When you said so far, it means that this additivity conjecture is violated?
Yes, it would be violated very significantly. But the thing is, to reach that conclusion, I made this assumption that if I just take an energy window and think about all the states in that energy window, the entropy of the A piece of the boundary for all of those states would be approximately the same as the black hole entropy. And that's just not true, right? This will include like dust that later on collapses to a black hole, which will have a very different entropy. And so we have to deal with the fact that in order to make this provisional argument, I imagine this property of H code, as I define it, as an energy window, which is just not true. So we have to work on that a little bit.
This one's also a holographic argument that is applied to large radius theories or whatever.
Yeah.
Is that correct?
Yeah.
So it wouldn't be a general statement.
A general statement in what sense?
Well, you're saying the violation can be large. And that's
So this would be an example of a very specific channel with a large violation. It wouldn't be that violations are generic. Another aspect of this SCAB, actually, is that about 4 years ago, additivity was proved for the most important, practically most important channels, right? So if you want to send light down an optical fiber, then the idealization of that channel, it turns out you have additivity, so you don't have to worry about any of this stuff. Like, so it really is, this conjecture is untrue, its status right now is untrue in the most annoying possible way. So I'm trying to make it untrue in a less annoying possible way. Okay. Well, how do we deal with the fact that H code contains states such that on the region A of the boundary, they don't look like the black hole? We just start pulling those states out. Okay, so let's remove states from H code that are atypical, so for which the entropy on A, so let's order them. So I'll call the states I'm taking out psi j. So we'll remove these psi j's. So these will be ones whose entropy is significantly less than we'd get with the black hole. So where there's a significant gap. So if you find such a state, like a bunch of dust that hasn't yet collapsed to a black hole, you remove it, and then you redefine H code to be the orthogonal complement of the piece you removed. But then you might find, oh, there's still another state in there that has a very low entropy, and you keep on removing them. And the picture will look something like this. So I'll remove the lowest entropy state first, and then the next to lowest energy state, and so on. And I can kind of make a little picture. So this is my state number. I start off by removing psi 1, then psi 2, and I keep on going. And there are a lot of states there. You know, there's sort of e to the black hole entropy states. And I keep on removing them. And the typical states in H code, they have an entropy, you know, on A, which is about the same as it would be for a black hole. And this curve might look something like, something like this, right? And I repeat this process until the minimum entropy would no longer give me a violation, right? So I remove the second one, or the first one, the second one, all the way up to some number m. And then the new H code is the span of what's left, right? Or it's the orthogonal complement of the things I removed. Now, if the log of m is less than the entropy of the black hole minus a constant, right? In other words, if I have removed a vanishing fraction of the states, then that's not going to affect the fact that I can make a nice approximation to the thermal field double. In order to prevent myself from getting a violation, I have to remove so many states that it's no longer possible to approximate the thermal field double state. And so in order to get to evade this story, the number of states that are going to have to be removed from H code is going to have to be, you know, it's a logarithm, the entropy of the black hole minus, you know, some constant. So the total number is a constant fraction of e to the sbh. And that is the connection. You know, that's this statement here. So either there are lots and lots and lots of states that I can produce as linear combinations of things I think of as black hole microstates, or more precisely, you know, the procedure that I described here, or this additivity conjecture, for which the biggest violation our hardest working quantum information theorists have been able to find so far, with a gap of 1 bit, can be done much better. And I should say, actually, this gap of 1 bit in dimension 183, that was Benoit Collins and one of his students. So I think a number of you know him from the Weingarten calculus, calculations in unitary integrals. So he's good at these sorts of calculations. So I think that's pretty much what I wanted to tell you about, this connection. I'll just say something this discussion has, you know, doesn't actually tell us anything about is what these atypical states that we're removing actually look like, right? That I think there are some known constructions in the literature, like this Hartmann-Maldacena Z2 quotient of the thermal field double state that will have atypically low entropy. But whether you can do this with states that all have holographic duals or whether you end up with just crazy looking states, we have no idea. If anyone has any suggestions, we'd like to hear about it. So thanks for your attention.
Questions for Patrick.
Could they be these sort of bag of gold spacetimes or something like that?
Could they be bags of gold?
Or even just with these like one-sided wormholes or whatever, where you have like in for ADS3 CFT2, you have all of these spacetimes, right, where you just have one horizon, but behind the horizon it's some higher genus Riemann surface.
Right, but won't those all have the same, for this, if you look at this less than half size interval on the boundary, won't they all actually, the boundary geometry, will it be different or will it be the same?
No.
Some will be different. Right, okay, so.
If they're different, I think unless you have something happening actually at the horizon, then it's not going to be small enough. It doesn't just need to be smaller in leading order, it needs to be half the thermal field double entropy. And the thermal field, half the thermal field double entropy is like the shortest minimal area surface that just goes to the horizon and then just anchored on the horizon. So I think if you're going to avoid that, you really need something at the horizon, not behind.
Maybe two questions. So the first is, if I remember correctly, say that to do your state removing algorithm,
mm-hmm,
I just pick a random subspace which isn't too big,
Okay.
Then shouldn't that work? And I think that isn't too big. I mean, for example, like finite fraction of the entropy would surely work even if the fraction is 99.99%.
So that's how we constructed these examples in the first place.
Yeah.
But what you find when you do that calculation, you will find, I think, in the case of random channels, when you do the analogous thing, you will get a gap, but the largest gap you can ever find that way is about a bit. That the strength of the convergence statement, like the concentration of measure, only gives you this, like, it's right on the cusp of being possible. Like, you can't just blindly apply Levy's lemma or one of those results. Like, this is why Hastings, I didn't do this and Hastings did it, because there was a lot of hard technical work to actually even get this.
Well, maybe let me ask it in a different way, though. I mean, at the moment, it kind of seems like both of your options should be true. Is that what you think, or you think we have to pick? I mean, I guess they kind of seem both reasonably true to me.
I'm not so sure. Yeah. This one, I don't know that I have great intuition, but it doesn't seem like it's earth-shatteringly impossible. Yeah. But I don't have any really strong reason to think that the large additivity violations survive.
So you vote for one?
I think so, but maybe that's just because I've worked to try to find additivity violations and haven't succeeded, so I have a sense of how hard that it is to make that happen.
So you feel like there shouldn't be maybe large additivity violations?
Honestly, I'm actually really agnostic on the question of which one is more likely to be true, or both. I don't feel that the initial version of this project was this idea existed, and we said, let's use it to prove that there are large violations, and we couldn't do it. So now this is the fallback position. One of these things is true.
Brian, next. Hey. So my intuition is informed by spin chains and tensor networks, but it feels like if you have roughly a mirror-like picture where you renormalize for a while and then you have the horizon, you just plug product states in there and you have a complete e to the s set of states that all have low entanglement and just look like they have the right energy density? This definitely works in spin chain infinite temperature, and that's my intuition is you're normalizing to that scale. And
right, so actually, why is that actually a route to, a less fancy route to constructing these violations, you think?
I think I'm saying one is true, and I don't really understand too very well. So
yeah, okay.
Yeah. From tensor networks point of view, I think it's clear that one is true, but I don't think we have any good understanding on the actual gravity why one should be true. And this is an argument that doesn't just rely on it's kind of like a tensor network. This is, we believe that there aren't extensive violations, then there just would be a rigorous argument that they have to exist in gravity.
There is a tension, right? That if you introduce product states into the theory, then the energy is going to go way up, right? And so the constraint that you're working in this energy window makes it hard to sort of do the analogous thing.
This is kind of an overlapping question, but I mean, I understand that you used holography because you used Hartmann and Maldacena, but you might think that whatever is true in holography has an analog for any chaotic quantum system. And, or to say it this way, if you had forced yourself to use an energy eigenstate, the mm-hmm. eigenstate thermalization hypothesis would tell you that this doesn't happen. So this is kind of a question of, how large should the energy window be for ETH-like properties to fail in a certain sense of linear combinations? Is nothing known about this, or are there, or if not, this is a question for both of you. And if not, surely there are systems that are simpler than holography in terms of simulating them on a computer, but would still have quantum chaotic properties where you could test this?
Well, the problem is this is actually, because this is not a statement about the typical situation, but about the worst case situation,
right.
It's actually one that's kind of, you can do numerics, but you can't do it's time consuming, it's a non-convex problem, and so you can't do it on very large systems. So this might be something that is true, or that if you just had a chaotic quantum system.
I guess
but there is additional structure in the case of, there's the Ryu Takinagi formula that's being used that you don't necessarily have access to.
Yeah.
But I agree. I mean, it might be a route to counterexamples more generally just by thinking about chaotic quantum systems.
And in terms of testing this tensor network type counterexample where you just make things factorize, right, what you could test in a quantum chaotic system is if you take a obviously factorized state, how big of an energy window does it span?
Right, yeah, sure.
That sounds like an easier problem than finding the energy eigenstates, taking all the linear combinations and seeing what happens.
Yeah. Now you still need, what you need to be true though, it needs to be true that when you look at the channel on one half of the system, that there are no low entropy output states. And I don't know, I suspect that wouldn't, you know, that won't be something that will come for free in the tensor network picture, that you might be able to argue it in the case of random tensor networks using some concentration of measure. But in random tensor networks, you have these small tensors. You know, the tensors that are random are small compared to the size of the output space or input space. And you have to control, you have to minimize over the whole input space. And so, the usual way that we make concentration of measure arguments, I don't think will ensure that S min for a single copy will be small if you're working with tensor networks. But you might be able to do it.
Well, I think I have an answer to Dan's question, at least partially, because exactly this question was discussed in our paper with Hong Lu. So we know how large the energy band has to be to violate from a macroscopic picture, and the energy band has to be very, very small, vanishingly small. So it means that there will be a lot of states which violate your property. They will have small entanglement. But when I say there will be many of them, I do not know if logarithm will be large enough.
Okay,
many,
well, that's a good start, though.
Many means maybe 100 or maybe a million, so I do not know the scaling of the logarithm.
Oh, okay, thanks.
But if I may have another comment, I don't understand why if you have small entanglement in the region A, you might necessarily have large mean energy. Is it possible just to have region A been empty and all energy being outside of region A, and you just make sure that the total energy balance is satisfied?
No, I was speaking more loosely, just that if you try to disentangle all of the degrees of freedom in the boundary in A, then that would definitely be, that would introduce a big energy penalty, but that's not really what you need to do, right? You have to selectively disentangle the degrees of freedom in A.
I think if you want to disentangle region A completely, it will only require energy proportional to the area of region A. So it may not be that large. Meaning it usually, in terms of the energy density, that's a vanishing fraction.
Yeah, right, yeah.
Further questions? We have a microphone over here.
Just follow up on Brian's question. Why can't I just have a end of the world brain somewhere behind the horizon? Then I can put some microscopic degree of freedom, like some spins on that end of the world brain to create a lot of orthogonal states, and then they will have like area law entropy.
So Jeff has actually proposed this, and so I think I'm going to defer to Jeff to respond on that front.
So a simple answer would be that there's e to the s black hole things that look roughly like a Z2 quotient of a thermofield double that have some end of the world brain at the bifurcation surface as Juan and Tom. It can't be behind it because then you still have a violation. It's not enough for these to have macroscopically smaller entropy, they have to have macroscopically small enough entropy. And that really requires that something happens at the horizon or in front of the horizon. It can't be like significantly behind the horizon.
Further questions? All right, well, let's thank all of this morning's speakers.